Locked On.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Logged On, the new podcast from Dazed about all things internet culture, from memes to emerging trends, deep web conspiracy theories, and beyond. I'm your host, Gunseli Yalchinkaya, and this episode we're joined by a very special guest, Shuman Bassa. For those of you who don't know, Shuman is an expert on internet culture. He's also the author of recent essays on Lawcore and Endcore, and he's the co-author of two books, The Age of Earthquakes and The Extreme Self. Not to mention a prolific online presence and a great internet friend. So, Shuman, welcome to the podcast. Today's episode is all about being mid, or more specifically, what it means to be mid in the internet age. So, if you're unsure about what mid means, it's short for mediocre, a term originating on TikTok a few years ago. There's a few meanings of the word, but I guess primarily it can kind of be broken down into two ideas. There's the live, laugh, love definition. So I guess the idea of mid is basic, which on TikTok, I'm sure you will have seen kind of like these videos of like hot girls, hot guys kind of in very like normie looking clothes, calling themselves like mid while like doing these seductive poses to the camera. But also, and I think this one's a bit more kind of crucial, is this idea of mid as basic, but with the delusion of being cool. So you're buying into the culture of cool mid-century furniture with a cockapoo, or I don't know, like going to Boiler Room, getting a bag in. Essentially buying into creative culture without getting your hands dirty.
So I think you're the expert here when it comes to subcultures and microcultures and niche cultures. So what I want to throw in to the ring at the beginning are actually a set of mid-concepts or things that, and maybe it's worth sort of mentioning that for many people, mid refers to things that are irritating, and it evokes certain emotions that are not necessarily pleasant, but they can be pleasant to identify. So some of the things that I think are mid are the word community, for example.
Yeah.
And how community has been used and misused and abused in this era of neoliberal capitalism. And indeed, that phrase itself, neoliberal capitalism, is another mid term, yeah. I think. And I'm sure we'll get into that. There's a sort of darling word of the art world currently, and you can't get away from it, and that's entanglement. And so I think, I mean, language is very important when it comes to midness. I'd like to introduce those into this hall of mid-shame. But there are also other things, maybe more like cultural markers or cultural phenomena that I find very, very mid. You know, the literature of identity politics, the fact that that still continues to be a thing, I think is really, really mid. And maybe last but by no means least is something that I would refer to as a sort of Western moral superiority when it comes to thinking about how the rest of the world decide to live and organize themselves culturally, politically, and particularly if they choose not to perform democracy. And there's a way in which I think certain liberal-minded Western thinkers are, you know, there's a sort of disparagement that takes place. And I find that extremely mid. And maybe another way of defining mid, therefore, is kind of a smug myopia.
No? Okay, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, no, I think those are all amazing conceptual examples of mid. I feel like my answers were going to be very mid in comparison.
Let's have yours, Gunseli.
Okay, so I guess when I think of mid, like things that come into mind immediately is like day festivals, especially inner city day festivals, coffee shops with signs outside of them with like really kind of icky phrases. Fred again, the DJ, cocaine, craft beer. Basically, I guess what I'm trying to break it down is anything that is essentially packaged to you as being cool is for me an immediate sign of midness. But I guess one thing that I think is important to clarify as well, because I feel like the word is interchangeably used with basic sometimes, and it'd be good to get your opinion on this as well. So would you say that mid is the same as basic?
I can't say with absolute certainty, and perhaps, you know, maybe by the end of this podcast, we'll have a bit more clarity about how those things are organized, whether it's on a straight line, whether it's a horseshoe or a kind of spiral of cringe death. But I do feel that, you know, one of the things that happens, and it happens extremely vividly online and through online culture, is the need to want to somehow outdo terms that have become too mainstream. And therefore, there's this constant kind of hunting and gathering of new terms. And so, you know, one of the things I suppose I want to, I'd like to get into is, you know, the difference between mid as a aesthetic category. And I think a lot of the things that you mentioned, you know, would fall into that. And then also this idea of weaponizing the word mid. And what that does from a kind of clout perspective to the person who's using the word mid to something or somebody else, if you see what I mean. And in a way, it's hard to get away from, you know, the word cool, even though it is probably the most mid, cringe, non-based word, you know, left from the 20th century cultural lexicon. But I think the things that cool have always stood for still matter. And so I think there's this constant need to want to define, maybe identify yourself to things that are cool. But then obviously the moment they become, as it were, too cool, then there's the kind of whiplash, no? Then there's the allergy, the kind of rejection of that. And again, it goes, you know, there's a sort of hierarchy, it seems to me, of wanting to constantly, especially for those, you know, people for whom this is a matter of life or death, identity-wise, want to constantly perform a sort of Houdini act of getting into and escaping these definitions at the right time.
Yeah. When you look at mid as a kind of aesthetic category, and I completely understand what you're saying, and I'd like to return to it in a moment. But I guess aesthetically, it's an interesting phenomena for me because when you kind of look at, and at first I was trying to imagine what cool would be, and yeah, whether it's kind of like straight line or whether it's a horseshoe and so on. And initially, I kind of saw cool on one end, and I actually like drew a diagram of this earlier, which I showed to you in a cafe. But cool on one end, basic on the other. And then everything in between is this kind of like weird no man's land called like the mid. But I feel that maybe we could kind of break that down as well into kind of further categories. So you kind of have like the upper mid, which I guess is stuff that is very easy, like kind of prepackaged cool that is very easy to buy into. But I feel like on a kind of popular culture level, it's still accepted as kind of cool in like the echelons of like the cultural world. So something like Heaven is a good example of that. It's the idea that, you know, you can buy a t-shirt at Heaven and have Deftones on it or have Rat Girl. And it's like immediately, because of that, you now have a signifier that you can like signal to other people like, oh, I know this and I know that. And I feel like maybe if we were looking at like the lower mid, that would probably be the kind of leftover backwaters of like hipster culture. But then when I look at and kind of, yeah, like returning to what you were saying, looking at what the idea of cool is for me, I'd find it hard to kind of locate that in like a set object or a set aesthetic as such. For me, like cool is something that's always, it's constantly in dialogue with itself, and maybe that's like the interplay between based and cringe. But then I feel that that also feeds into what basic means as well. So maybe the horseshoe actually comes into it in that sense. But what you were saying about the kind of distinction between mid being an aesthetic and mid being something more than that, it would be good to kind of hear some examples of the way you see that kind of playing out.
I think, you know, what that has done for centuries, at the very least, is, you know, we've had things that we've had gatekeepers, essentially. And I think so much of culture, and particularly throughout the 20th century, you know, pre-Web culture, and certainly pre-Web 2 culture, was shaped by tastemakers or gatekeepers, no? And we, you know, if you're a consumer of culture, you were essentially on the receiving end of it, no? If you picked up a magazine in the 80s, you know, there wasn't much scope for you to shape the content of that magazine, no? It was a kind of one-way, it was a one-way system.
Like a trickle-down.
It was a trickle-down, no? And maybe you wrote a letter in, maybe there was some sort of reader's focus or something. But of course, what the, you know, what the internet and then Web 2 and now Web 3 has done is completely, you know, shattered that model. And so that question of, you know, who are the tastemakers, who are the gatekeepers of culture, has been completely exploded now, it seems to me. And I think when, you know, when that happened, those very clearly demarcated categories of what was good taste, what was refined taste, what was mass culture taste, what was bad taste, you know, again, got completely exploded and like horseshoed to the nth degree. And it seems to me that, you know, I mean, we simply now living in this like hall of mirrors of complete relativism.
Yeah, what you were saying about the whole trickle down as well, it always brings me back to that scene in Devil Wears Prada, the cerulean blue.
Exactly.
And yeah, there's no longer someone to tell us like what items to consume, what is good, what is bad, what is tasteful, what is not. And I guess the internet has not only flattened this taste, but also kind of gamified it as well.
Exactly, exactly. And this is it, no? I mean, if somebody tells you this is good taste and this is bad taste, there'll be a, you know, a gazillion people that will immediately take that bad taste descriptor actually as a badge of honor and will immediately spin that so that that so-called bad taste is now the best taste possible. And I that's the now non-silent majority that you're able to summon online. You know, something I've been thinking about a lot recently, and I think it does play into this, is, you know, the fanficification of everything.
Right? Wait, so what do you mean by that?
So, exactly. You know, fanfic, of course, is the kind of cultural production that users make out of official culture. So an important example or a milestone of fanfic was 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes.
Because 50 Shades of Grey was essentially Twilight fanfic. You know, and it was written by a middle-aged woman on her blog who sort of imagined the protagonists from Twilight in a sort of softcore, erotica, parallel narrative involving furry handcuffs and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And suddenly, you know, this mushroomed into the phenomenon of 50 Shades. And I think this was a really important wake-up call for traditional cultural gatekeepers, because they suddenly realized that, you know, there was now the potential for every reader to potentially become an author. But it's, I mean, it's also what we, you know, everyone will know about the comment section, for example. You know, the comment section on a Instagram post or a TikTok post or YouTube post are a kind of fan fiction as well, no? But we now live in a time when that fan fiction can be so brilliant, so kind of coruscating, so illuminating, that it now has the potential to have a kind of escape velocity and become mainstream culture itself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is what I mean by trickle up. And I think, again, these are all phenomenon that are products of, you know, of the internet age and of digital everything that I think have had a really profound effect on the markers of taste that we've received from like 500 years of Western culture or something like that.
Yeah, completely. I guess it's like on one hand, it's a liberation. And I guess something that popped into my head while you were speaking just then, kind of looking at remix culture, and like, I guess it started with the LimeWire revolution. And then obviously now all information is available to us all the time, ever. The way that's impacted music, which I guess is kind of the world I was coming from originally. Like the hyperpop community, even though the word's quite taboo now, but during the pandemic, I feel like that was a great example of kids in their bedrooms making music out of just like random shit on FL Studio, basically, and mismatching a lot of genres that were previously considered to be like low bar, not very cool, lowbrow, I should say, rather. And kind of mixing, yeah, like Eurodance with hard style with, I don't know, like pick a genre. And a recent example that comes into mind as well, Dorian Electra recently released a single called Freak Mode. And it's amazing because you kind of look at what they've done and they've taken tap dancing, steampunk, two things that by all means should be deeply uncool, and have repackaged them in such a way. And I guess this is where the contextualization of these kind of lowbrow, highbrow things come into play, is what's important. And I guess, yeah, it's the context of something. It's the way it's kind of instrumentalized and used, which I find very interesting.
But it just does get sort of more and more complicated. And I just want to say, I think I agree with you about that, obviously, the mashing up of high and low and nothing new, right? I mean, pop culture or pop art from Warhol and Rauschenberg, et cetera, in the 50s and the 60s have been doing this. But I think the difference is that they were doing it as established artists in the established art world. And they were, as it were, kind of going on sort of cultural tourism, and taking a Campbell soup can, or taking a bit of newspaper, or an interview magazine excerpt, or whatever, and then putting it into the white cube. I think what you're describing in terms of, you know, what almost everybody's able to do in their bedroom now, does that mean that all these bedrooms are the white cubes of today? Because actually, what in a trickle up system, you know, it starts out in the bedroom, and then the white cube gallery feels deep envy and essentially wants to kind of capture it and then transplant it into mainstream culture. And that's the same for record labels. It's the same for Netflix, et cetera, et cetera. And I do think that it is maybe one of the indisputable wonders of the internet age, that every traditional cultural gatekeeper now has an almost infinitely wide net to capture.
Yeah, and I think you touched on something really important, returning back to this idea of mid. For me, like, mid needs to be lucrative. Like, there needs to be some financial gain attached to it. Like, when I think of some things which, like, quote unquote, edgy, cool, whatever. Like, I'm looking at some like weird things that I'm interested in. Like, I'm looking into cryptids at the moment. There's no way you could market that unless...
Can you tell us about cryptids?
I mean, cryptids are technically animals that... Sorry in advance of the podcast, but cryptids are animals that have not been proven to exist in like the scientific framework, basically. Right. So I guess actually you could argue A24 is doing a film on the back rooms at the moment that's kind of cryptid adjacent. So maybe it is lucrative in that sense. But I guess like the things that mid co-ops, I feel, are very separate to the kind of, it's like going to a day festival is very different to kind of pulling up your sleeves and going to a sweaty basement rave where you have to kind of break into an old abandoned station or something. It comes with like less of a risk attached to it, or I don't know. Like logging onto Dolls Kill and like buying some kind of alternative adjacent clothes is very different to kind of buying the material, slashing it up yourself. And so, yeah, I guess there's this, and to use the midterm neoliberal. Yeah, I feel like there is a very kind of strong relationship with neoliberalism in that sense. But one thing I am particularly interested in, so I guess this idea of mid being neither base nor cringe, it's not particularly polarizing, even if people want to pretend that it is by adopting like some of these like ideas ideas and signifiers. How do you think mid exists in relation to something like normcore, for example?
Yeah, for anybody out there who wasn't around 2013 when normcore broke out as a trend report by a group of pseudo trend forecasters called K-Hole at the time, who were based predominantly in New York. Normcore was an attempt to give a kind of name to a style, particularly a fashion style, that would signify a set of like apparel basics, but maybe from like half a generation or a generation before. So the kind of dad sneaker. Like, basically, like, you have to think of Jerry Seinfeld.
No? Oh, yeah, true.
kind of, you know, very standard issue denim jeans, sort of baggy shirt that may have been tucked into the jeans, the sort of dad sneakers that obviously Balenciaga then made billions of dollars off. But there was something about normcore, which was almost this idea that we'd exhausted the idea of like eccentricity, of trying to define your edge difference or your kind of edge advantage over mm-hmm. everybody else, you know. And again, you come full circle where you start dressing like your Gen X or boomer mum or dad or something like that.
Yeah.
The difference being that actually the items that you're wearing are potentially very expensive. And so you're sort of participating in a kind of inside joke where it's as though you're performing a set of trend codes, but at the same time, like, disavowing them.
Yeah.
And so I think what's interesting about normcore, think about normcore in relation to mid, is whether normcore was a sort of celebration of midness at the time, or whether it was a kind of denunciation of midness. I think in reality, it was both, right?
Yeah.
Which is why it ended up becoming this phenomenally big phenomenon off which, you know, brands like Gap and you name it made, again, hundreds of millions of dollars, and K-Hole made nothing, which is a lesson for everybody who puts out PDF trend reports. Let it be known that somebody's possibly going to make a lot of money and you won't. But I do think that at the same time you had in art, you had something called zombie formalism. And in a way, you could think of zombie formalism as like the norm core of contemporary art at the time. And it was a particular kind of abstract painting that said very little but sold for huge kind of prices and then ended up being in the collection of Ivanka Trump and her very expensive apartment in New York. And again, it's one of these moments where it feels like taste, good taste, bad taste, cringe taste, base taste, is in a kind of spectacular crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not sure who the joke is on. You're not sure whether you're the one who is telling the joke or whether you're the one who the joke is being kind of directed at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess there's always that constant interplay. But when you're speaking about normcore as well, my mind just went straight to the 2020 Tradcath Dime Square thing, which I guess is maybe like, I don't know, I don't want to say a similar phenomenon because I feel like it's kind of nuanced in a worm-brained way that I don't think we should go into. but I guess like the whole kind of co-opting of like the Brandy Melville aesthetic, and suddenly for a hot second that became this obscenely boring beige aesthetic because of the context in which it was situated, which was this very kind of hyper online, like super schizo-brained thing, like suddenly became cool mm-hmm. and like edgy, and obviously that came with a lot of reactionary undercurrents. But I found that a very kind of interesting thing, which stemmed from, I guess, the pandemic and everyone being so intensely online.
Yep.
But immediately, like, it and like I see you kind of get this with the whole Dime Square crowd now and like this whole clout bubble completely popping. But yeah, it's become like deeply cringe and deeply mid, I would say. But so kind of moving on from like the idea of like mid as the aesthetic, I don't know, for me, and like, it'd be interesting to get your take on it, but it's almost, for me, I see mid as this constant, or actually no, let me reword that. Mm-hmm. So it's not the act of unmidification. The act of not being mid for me is like a constant act that you constantly have to fight against. There's always going to be these like capitalist forces being like, buy my oat milk, like buy like this, that, insert X brand over this brand. So to unmidify yourself has to be a state of mind, like an action. Would you agree?
Yes, but one that probably ends in kind of frustrating disappointment. And maybe this has something to do with, I mean, just thinking while you were talking about the trad-cath thing, that, you know, the idea of like mainstream and indie culture, again, for me growing up, there was a difference. We had indie bands, we had indie labels, we had indie presses. There was something, here's the thing, it wasn't just cultural, it was also economic. So, you know, the reason Rough Trade Records was different to an RCA or an Island Records was their how they worked economically, how they worked as a distribution system, etc. But, you know, fast forward to today, is there anything more mid than indie music?
No? Well, it's made a comeback. So. a lot of people in New York would disagree.
Of course they would.
Indie sleazers are so... You even get that with Coachella, for instance. I was watching that Woodstock documentary that I'm sure literally everyone watched, Woodstock 99. I was watching it on the plane like a few months ago. And I guess after Woodstock 99, what replaced it was Coachella. And originally it wasn't like this huge uber capitalist influencer hellhole that it is today. But you look at it now, I'd say Coachella is like peak mid. There's nothing unmid about it, really. And seeing how all of these kind of ideas get watered down to use the word again, like flattened. There was actually this article that went live 2 weeks ago. It was on the New Statesman and it's titled Everything is Clapham Now. And I think it did a really good job, or the writer did a great job in kind of touching on this homogenization, kind of alluding again to like the nature of the internet and how nowadays it's really hard to find anything that's remotely not a barista with a kind of homogenous tattoo on their arm.
And, you know, that relates to something that my co-authors, Hans-Ulrich Obrist and Douglas Coupland, wrote in our first book called The Age of Earthquakes. And I thought it might be helpful to mention it here. And it's this idea of smoopid. And smoopid is smart and stupid joined together. So smoopidity defines the mental state wherein we acknowledge that we've never been smarter as individuals, and yet somehow we've never felt stupider. So we now collectively inhabit a state of smoopidity. And, you know, in this age of smoopidity, you know, 97 is the new 100 IQ, and also 103 is the new 100 IQ. And, you know, one of the other terms that we have, which is the flip side of smoopid, is Stuart. And Stuart is stupid and smart. And so it's this idea that, you know what, I would be really, really smart if I just had connection to the internet now, if I could look something up. And so, you know, we then followed that up a few years later in our recent book called The Extreme Self, with this idea of like the hundredocracy. And I think the hundredocracy is another way of defining this new international style that I just sort of talked about. So the hundredocracy is, for a few centuries, smart people more or less ran the world. The flattening effect of the internet has allowed the world to be run by people with an IQ of 100, and it's the revenge of the bell curve. And so, you know, I think in that sense, we're rightfully, you know, making fun of a lot of midness and a lot of midification. But I think there's also a very serious aspect to the dominance of the mid, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, the mid very much in many ways runs the world today. No?
Yep.
And so, you know, the moment that we handed over, let's say, creative voice so that every user could become a creator, we also did the same with democracy. It also means that every potential voter in a liberal democracy is now as equally, you know, misinformed. And actually, it's been proven, for example, that misinformation travels 7 times faster than information.
Yeah.
There is, I think, a very serious aspect to the midification of information and the impacts that it's had on, let's say, the health of democracies. I mean, I just want to say here that I would say that the health of a democracy is measured, I believe, in how well its electorate are educated. But it seems now that, you know, democracies, and I just read something this morning about how, you know, will the next American presidential election in 2 years' time be essentially dictated by AI, by deepfakes? I mean, India's already seen this. I mean, many places have seen this for the last few years. But, you know, we're now living in a time where it is simply impossible, no, to tell the difference between, you know, somebody's real voice, their deepfake voice. And so, you know, this, I would say, is the kind of maybe the dark side of midification and the really very sort of serious implications yeah. that it has.
Evil mid be like.
Evil mid be like.
Yeah, I guess it's the idea of on the internet, whereas every village had one idiot, now all the idiots are in one place. And this is only going to get more and more exacerbated. I mean, TikTok is the biggest source of information for Gen Z at the moment, the biggest source for news. And as we kind of shovel into these little pockets, these deep forest pockets, and for those who don't know, deep forest, I guess, is when we move away from these Web 2 platforms, very public platforms, into kind of more like shadowed places like Discord, private servers, so on and so on. Consensus reality is only going to break down further. And when you add AI into the mix, suddenly the Pope's like fitted out in Montclair and Trump's getting arrested on the streets of New York. And who knows how all of this is going to feed into the way we not only perceive reality, but perceive what is mid. But again, what you were saying about kind of our brains like being bombarded with information also, yeah, like I guess the internet, social media, the algorithm, everything is tailored to being mid at the moment. And I find one of the most like prominent examples of that, which spring to mind, is on TikTok, like the fact that even the term TikTok brain exists, mm-hmm. Like shows us that our kind of mental facilities are both overstimulated and disconnected. The information we're consuming is like low substance, low level, like stimulation. It kind of traps us in this eternal scroll. And I guess a good example of that is, and I feel like this has already become midified anyway, but it was funny a few months ago, but the Family Guy mm-hmm. kind of sludge content, the Subway Surfers, boring air. It almost feels like maybe an adjacent term to mid is that everything suddenly feels boring air, both in our phones and in the real world, because everything's mediated through the phones or digital stuff anyway.
And maybe there's also a kind of connection there to the idea of being overstimulated and being numb.
Yes.
Exist on a plateau now of equivalence, which is why you get these amazing TikTok videos where, you know, there's something going on in the top half and then the bottom half is some sort of slime, visual slime ASMR. It's like, what is going on there? Like, what sensations are being piped into my kind of brain and my neurons and my heart. And the way I see it is it's that knife edge, you know, between mm-hmm. like stimulation and desensitization at the same time. And in a way, that's another way to mention MID. You know, just to loop it back to, you know, maybe what are some of the more profound implications of all of the things that we're talking about. It's like, well, yeah, if I'm equally overstimulated but also numb at the same time, I mean, that also describes probably a shelf full of pharmaceuticals that, you know, people...
Actually, my brain was just jumping to that, the fact that there's now an Adderall shortage and ketamine is like the most popular drug for young people. Like,
exactly.
It's not a coincidence, I guess.
No, it's not a coincidence at all. And to loop back to what we're saying at the beginning, I mean, you know, what do you think is cool when you're in this state of being overstimulated and numb at the same time?
That's the thing, because I feel like there's that, and there's also the kind of the financial implications of, I just think, like, no matter how hard we try with like downward mobility, like the gig economy at the moment, even if people want to not be mid, I feel like the conditions placed upon us as young people is just so insanely difficult mm-hmm. at the moment. So we're not only smooth brained, we're worm brained. On top of that, like, there's not enough time. It's not like in, you know, like the 90s or whatever, you had like Throbbing Gristle or designers like Galliano, like Alexander McQueen. They had the tools, despite coming from working class backgrounds, to be able to create things that felt like world breaking. Whereas now, I guess, like, a huge part of this is the internet and social media, but obviously the socio-political conditions that are placed upon us as well. It's just like, we're just emotionally fried, like mentally fried. And I think you can really see that in the way we not only consume culture, but the kind of culture that is shaping us and shaping this generation.
I mean, I always think about that in relation to one's ability to imagine the future or even a future. And one of the things I've noticed speaking to people that are, you know, several generations younger than myself is that certainty of a future is simply not a certainty anymore. We clearly live in a time now where there are ecological expiry dates, and they are not decades away, they're not centuries away, they are years away, single digit years away. And of course, that's going to have like an incredibly profound, you know, neuro anxious effect on your sense of being, your sense of placement in the cosmos. But cosmos in the sense of, how do I spend my time? Now, how do I spend my short-term time? How do I spend my midterm time? To what end? And these big narratives, I mean, I wrote this piece called Lawcore, which you mentioned at the beginning. And, you know, what I mean by Lawcore, L-O-R-E-C-O-R-E, is this existential need that people have today to storify themselves. But this is happening exactly at the same time that these really received grand narratives that we've had for generations or longer are collapsing around us. But then at the same time, we have these devices, we have these platforms, we have these technologies that empower us, no, to storify every single second of our day.
Everything's like a LARP.
Everything's a LARP. It's a kind of Richter smile. No, that the smile that people have on their faces, it's a I'm grinning and bearing it kind of smile.
Like the Wojak.
kind of Wojak smile. And yeah, I think it's really important to mention all of these things as a kind of deep background to, you know, if we think about midness as an iceberg, then underneath the kind of water level are all of these things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to remind us that all these things are interconnected. And again, in our book, The Extreme Self, we say that, you know, anxiety is to Generation Y and Generation Z what depression was to Generation X. Mm. You know, every generation gets its neuropathology, and it also gets its pharma kind of pathology. My generation is very much Prozac nation. And now we have, as you say, everything from Adderall to Ket to deal with anxiety or overstimulation or understimulation. And recently, it really feels like if you don't suffer from some kind of neuro
ailment.
ailment or neuro kind of abnormality, that's really mid. No,
like that's so true.
There's no way you're going to enter the halls of eliteness unless you can demonstrate, no, that you're on that neuro kind of
neurospicy. Neurospicy
scale.
Well, no, it's funny that you say that as well, because I'm kind of thinking, and obviously everything's relative, but I guess the things that I perceive cool, I mean, we're both in orbiting similar internet scenes. And yeah, I can't imagine anyone who doesn't have like an inch of ADHD either actually keeping up with it or wanting to keep up with it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess it's the chicken or the egg. I don't know which one comes first, but the nature of the internet and the rushing mimetic pace lends itself definitely to a certain type of neurospiciness.
So, of course, there's now a rushing need for people to have themselves diagnosed. But if they can't afford it professionally, how are they going to do it? They're going to do it themselves, and they're going to do it through this kind of hive mind, particularly on TikTok.
Yeah.
And so it's another way in which that the hourglass has been turned over, it seems to me. The idea of being kind of neurologically normal is, for many people, a very mid thing.
No, yeah.
Like super mid.
I mean, it's great for us as people who are clearly very not normal. I guess, and this is going to be a very mid question, but I guess this kind of brings me onto the idea of, is it even possible to be cool anymore if most things are just mid? Like, I don't know. I guess for me, anything that I perceive as not mid is anything that threatens the neoliberal order of like the microwavable idea of what I should be buying into. It's also something that scares away the normies.
Yeah.
Kind of online examples of that spring to mind for me would be like deep fried memes is a really good example that not only helps surpass any kind of algorithmic censorship. But
for people who aren't terminally online.
Oh yeah, please.
Can you describe what a deep fried meme is?
So a deep fried meme is kind of exactly how it sounds. It's a meme that has been so heavily processed over kind of multiple, like all the pixels have just been kind of fried out and burnt out. And that's not only funny, but the kind of origins of it is because of the censorship rules on Instagram. By deep frying a meme, you can basically bypass these kind of algorithmic police guards and get to convey information that would normally kind of get you zucked. But anyway, so deep fried memes, I find deeply cool. I would struggle to find anyone who would disagree. but yeah, anything that...
Well, just you wait till we start seeing deep fried memes on the, you know, BBC 6 o'clock news.
Immediately it's mid, yeah.
It's probably already there. No, I mean, I find it a really fascinating, but also kind of slightly head-fucky question about whether... You know, whether it's possible to be cool any more. And one way I kind of now think about it, and it's just, you know, putting it out there, is, you know, maybe cool is like the lightning and then mid is like the thunder.
Yes, okay.
And so every cool is just a kind of... inevitability of the mid that will follow. And that's why it goes back to this whole notion of like cool hunting and wanting to be the edgiest of edgelords or edgeladies or edgedays. because you want to be where the lightning is, not where the thunder is. But in terms of like whether I think anything is cool, something that came into my feed today, and it, I think, maybe for at least for the next 24 hours, this feels like it could be cool, is a picture of somebody wearing the red mischief boots.
Oh, yeah.
But they've, instead of how everybody's been wearing them so far, which is to make sure that the full knee-length height of these, like, Snow White, Seven Dwarfs type...
Astro Boy
boots are on full display. Somebody's worn them with, you know, very tight, sort of skinny drainpipe jeans, with the jeans pulled over the sort of upper part of the boots. And so you still see the silhouette of the mischief boots, but now they're underneath these kind of drainpipe skinny jeans. And I will stick my neck out, you know, certainly for the next 24 hours. To me, that looks really cool. but obviously, the minute everybody starts doing that, then it won't be cool anymore. But I love that there, because you know, it's something that has been. I mean, it's a really good example of like a IRL meme artifact, and it happens so fast with such sort of vividness and force that it's like it's already fried in pop culture. But by, you know, combining it now with the threat of the return of the skinny jeans, which is something that we've, you know, we're being threatened with over the last couple of weeks, there's something there that I find really fantastic.
Yeah, I don't think I could have put it any better. but yeah, I think it also, the point about this kind of 24-hour expiry date as well, obviously with memes, and I know you mentioned to me earlier about there being nothing more mid than someone sending you a meme that you've seen like a week ago.
Yeah.
And it's always that kind of like smile, grimace, like expression of like, oh, thanks.
Like well done.
Like slow clap.
Slow clap. but yeah, that is an extremely cringy feeling.
Yeah.
And maybe what's even more cringy is they don't know that is the case, know that they're a week late or something like that. And you don't want to break their heart mm-hmm. and tell them that that's the case. So slow clap.
Yeah, slow clap. But I think it also then just like completely reveals to us how disgustingly online we exactly, are as well. Yes. So I'm like, who's the real winner? I don't even know at this point. but I feel like now is a great place to start winding down. Thank mm-hmm. you so much, Schumann, for joining the podcast. This has been an amazing talk. And yes.
Thank you so much. And I hope and I pray that this inaugural episode of the Days podcast has been mid, but in the best possible and forgivable way. Thank you so much, Kinsale.
Thank you. And thank you for tuning in to Logged On, the Days podcast. Like and subscribe and all that. We're going to go touch some grass now. So thank you for listening.
Bye.
Logged On.